In this week's episode of Studio Ink 3rd, we'll be reviewing the impressive win against Genoa. We'll be previewing the game against Hellas Verona. We'll be talking all things Ink 3rd with Gab Marcotti, this week's Moji, Moratti and Frog, and much, much more. Everything on Studio Ink 3rd, on the Sempre Ink 3rd. Benvenuti, bentornati to another edition of Studio Inter, a new week, and three very impressive points, even though it's just Genoa. But before we get to everything, because there is quite a lot to talk about, let me introduce my panelists, starting with the SempreInter.com preview writer, Mr. Mohamed Nassar. How are you feeling? I bet you feel like, you know, you were right all along, we need to stop being negative and all that stuff, right?
I don't know. Look, I feel great. I think it couldn't have possibly started on a better note than this. But no, we'll get into it later. As I wasn't left. There are still a few questions that need to be answered. But overall, it's a fantastic start. So very, very happy.
Absolutely. And we're also joined by a good friend from Canada. Who shares an injury history with Leonardo Spinazzola. He's a producer over on TSN. Welcome back, Mr. Michael Gallo.
What's going on, guys? I saw Spinazzola take his first steps 2 days ago, and I'm not even close to being there yet. So I'm trying to look at his example and hopefully recover almost as quickly as he does.
Forza Michael. And we're also joined by the SempreInter.com feature writer. He writes a column every week called What We Learned from Inter This Week. Welcome back, Mr. Jake Smalley.
Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to discussing some Italian football today. So, you know, it's been a long summer, hasn't it? And I've been able to get my fix a little bit while listening to the Totally Italian Football podcast with James Horncastle, James Richardson, and some man who really hates Chievo. So, you know, is that. But I'm really looking forward to talking about Inter today. It's been probably the strangest summer you can think of from a team that's just won the Scudetto. So I'm really looking forward to getting my team into some stuff.
It is quite bipolar, and you did write a piece where that got a lot of traction on the site about how Suning have made Inter into a laughingstock. But we're going to discuss all of this with our guest. He is a senior writer on ESPN. He is one half of the Gab and Jules show podcast with Laurent Julien. He's also a Corriere dello Sport correspondent. He is Mr. Calcio, if you ask me, in the English-speaking world. Returning back to Studio Inter, Mr. Gabriel Marcotti, how are you?
Thanks for having me. And I just a small correction. Oh. It's Julien Laurens.
Oh, Julien Laurens. Sorry.
It's your fault for having a last name that's the first name.
that's great then. Thank you. I'm sorry for that. Right, let's get to it. Before we get to the positivity, there was something that happened that I wanted to speak to you about, Gab, because I think it's pretty important. And to everyone listening, I want to give a little bit of a background story. On the 20th of August, 3 days ago, Inter Vice President Javier Zanetti was on an event called Campioni Sotto le Stelle. It was an event organized by the municipality of Biella, and he said some interesting things when he was asked about this season. And he says, "I cannot lie to the Inter fans. Maybe others do, but I don't. It will be a difficult and complicated season. This must be said to be fair towards everyone, but it also must be said that we will be competitive. Inzaghi is working well." Now, that in and of itself may not be something to raise one's eyebrows. But then afterwards, when Gabriele Orealli left in the manner that he was left, he didn't leave, he was sacked. And Javier Zanetti went out on his Instagram page and he wrote a long letter thanking him for everything, saying that, you know, this is always your home, etc. I see a conflict here brewing between Inter, between Javier Zanetti and Suning. This is not something that he does. Javier Zanetti does not go against or rock the boat at all. Here he did it two times in less than 3 days with a very clear message. At least that's how I interpret it. I want to ask you, Gab, what is your interpretation of this? Is there a conflict brewing? Is it just he was just expressing his views? Or do you think that this was a very clear dig towards Suning?
I mean, I think I like you, I was struck by Sanecki's original words. I think, you know, when Sanecki comes out and speaks out so clearly and doesn't cheerlead, and, you know, the line about others may lie to you or whatever, I mean, misrepresent, I won't. I mean, I think, I don't know, I'm purely speculating here, but I was struck maybe by some of the stuff that came out, you know, around, obviously, or you guys all know, obviously, we're under the impression that it was just going to be Hakimi, and then the offer for Lukaku comes in, and Lukaku's gone, and whatever else. I think there was a sense of perhaps promises or indications not maintained. But then I also wonder about this, you know, we have a sense that these guys all sit together around one big table, but they don't. I genuinely wonder how many people at Inter actually have direct contact with Suning. How many people actually, and if so, you know, is it just with Steven or is it with decision makers at Suning? And how much latitude does Steven actually have? And frankly, at this stage, how much latitude does Suning actually have? Because
or the Zhang family, even, or the Zhang family, because I mean,
or the Zhang family, yeah. This is, you know, we kind of have to accept that, you know, this Inter now indirectly are essentially, you know, I don't want to say they're directly owned by the Chinese government, but that is kind of the reality about influence. So maybe I'm partial to Steven. I don't think he's being deceptive. I think if certain moves are made, it's not because, you know, the money then flows into Steven's pocket, or his dad's pocket. No. I just think they're not really in control. I think we just have to accept the fact that this is a distressed asset, and one that the Chinese government would probably like to rid itself of without making a loss, which is difficult. And that's simply the fact. You know, sometimes clubs are under government control, and it's Qatar or Abu Dhabi, and it's endless fun. And other times, it's a bit less fun. I mean, we've essentially been nationalized. So I generally think that's all it was. I'd be disappointed if, you know, Sanetti was taking other moves. I know that there's a conspiracy theory whereby Sanetti was looking for other investors and positioning himself there for a post-Suning future. I genuinely don't know. I genuinely get the sense that if other investors were around, they would have found them. And I also get one other feeling when I had the opportunity, you know, back when Inter were looking to restructure their debt. I know for a fact that, you know, there's somebody I know who works for a company that they're one of the biggest in the world at helping corporations restructure debt, and they have a big operation in China and whatnot. And, you know, this guy, they have offices in Milan, and, you know, this guy went and spoke to somebody at Inter, and immediately the next day they set up conference calls and everything, and they're all really excited to talk to him. And then, you know, when it got to China, the trail kind of went dead. They were suddenly no longer interested. They wanted to deal with their people. They already knew what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it. And, you know, you kind of get the sense that the people who are in charge at Inter right now have very, very little power in that regard.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking about that, like you said, I don't think this is going into Suning's pocket, any money they're making. I mean, their biggest mistake was to decline the offer from BC Partners in January, February, because they got sidetracked by this waterfall called the European Super League. I think everyone is, you know, I think that's broadly accepted now. What we're in the situation they're in now is, I mean, given what we've learned from China, that Suning.com is no longer in control of the Suning. It's Alibaba, who essentially is run by the Chinese government. Like you said, they're not even control of the brand. They still control the main company, that the holding company that controls Inter and all other companies. But it's they look weakened. They look severely weakened, and they have taken a huge loss. The Zhang family, that is. I personally did not believe a word when they said that they were just going to sell Hakimi. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think that this was a situation where maybe Marotta and Auxilio were saying this in order to hope to offload the Lazaros and João Marios and Nainggolans and try to make up for it that way without having to sell another player? Or do you believe what, or are you more, do you subscribe more to the events as Federico Pastorello described them in his Instagram post?
Look, I think Pastorello looks out for his clients first and foremost, and he says what's in his client's interest. I don't also believe that Lukaku requested to go and all this other stuff. You know, I just simply don't believe that.
Neither do
I. You know what really scared me about the Hakimi thing, when I was in Holly, I started reading this, and was the fact that, oh, the club need cash, and selling Hakimi is a great way to raise cash, right? We always hear about plus valence and this and that, amortized value. Well, Hakimi doesn't bring you much in that sense because he's only been there a year, right? So his residual value remained really high. When I saw that, that's when I got really concerned, because that's when you're really, really scrambling for cash, right? Those other people, João Mario, Lázaro, whatever, you know, at best what you're doing is, if you can shift them, is you're getting, you know, you're getting their wages off your books and getting a couple million in. If you saw Hakimi, you're like, right, we need cash and we need it now. You know, this is, you know, this is the most saleable asset. And, you know, and I think that is really kind of what blew me away. Lukaku came later. I don't think Inter planned on selling him. I could be wrong here. As I said, I was on holiday, I wasn't reporting, but I genuinely got the feeling that, you know, they were thinking more, you know, let's hunker down, let's sell somebody else, let's, you know, maybe even Lautaro, despite the fact that, you know, it would be more difficult because of the contractual situation to get a big fee. And then, you know, when the Chelsea money came in, Chelsea offer came in, I have to say, and maybe I'm a little old school on this, you know, very few players in the world at that age are worth that kind of money. And so I think they really had no choice. I don't fault them for taking that money. I think Lukaku is genuine when he says he would have loved to stay. And, you know, he's happy going back to Chelsea in London. That's where he spent a big chunk of formative years. That's fine. I'm good with that, too. I can't blame them for selling Lukaku, personally.
No, not blame them, but I'm thinking more in the sense that, you know, he wrote, you know, he was very clear. For me, the most important and interesting part of what Pastorello said was, you know, Simone Inzaghi, which I believe, and then Beppe Marotta and Piero Auxilio did not want to sell Lukaku. It was the Chinese ownership who decided to make some evaluations. That's the version of events that I find really interesting.
Well, because look, I mean, you want me to be really cynical here? I'm Italian. I can be as cynical as the next guy, right?
No. I'm just asking.
Pastorello is more likely to do business with Marotta and Auxilio at some point in the future than he is to go and do business with Suning or indeed with the Chinese government, right?
Yeah.
And look, I think at this point too, I mean, look, if the scenario is what we were saying earlier, that they're just sitting around waiting for better times to sell the club. You know, if you're the Zhang family, yeah, okay, we'll play the bad guys. We'll take it on the chin. You know, sure, blame us, right? It would have made no sense for Stephen Zhang to come out and be like, oh no, I wanted to keep Lukaku, but you know, that bad Mr. Marotta decided to sell him. what are you gonna do? Like, you're undermining your guy, and you're undermining the club, and you're making his job tougher when he works for you and it's your asset. You know, I get all that. I don't think anybody wanted to sell Lukaku, but when somebody puts that much money on the table and you're in that financial situation, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to hand you over to Mo. Mo, did you have a question for Gab?
Yeah, I have a question for Gab, but I just wanted to comment on this. I don't know where Lukaku said that he wanted to stay other than through Pastorello. It's all it's a dream come true, kissing the Chelsea badge. I think Lukaku is very happy to go. I don't see for a second. I haven't seen any compelling evidence to and I don't dislike Lukaku for leaving. I don't label him a traitor. It's fine. He's done great for us, like we said last week, so on and so forth. But I'm under no illusions that Lukaku wanted to leave. He figures that Chelsea is a bigger team. They just won the Champions League. He'd like to get the European trophy under his belt after winning the league. And he decided that it's greener pastures back in London. And that's why he's off. Especially since Conte had left. So I think Lukaku is the main person who did want to leave. I think, Gab had just said, potentially they would have been, Marotta and Auxilio would have been content in offloading Lautaro. As we know, they had already received an offer from Tottenham. They would have been very content in letting go of Lautaro, who probably has a bit more capital gain and less of a residual value on the books anyway. So it would have made both financial and technical sense, perhaps, to get rid of him. But anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked on that. My question to you, Gab, is looking back, if you could, 12 months ago, or maybe just over 12 months, however long last season was, looking at, you know, comparing where you stand today and looking at the Inter's prospects in the league, are you more or less optimistic about their chances than you were last season at the same time?
I'm less optimistic. And you know, I was a Conte critic as much as anybody. But equally, and you know, I'm repeating myself, I said this on the show as well, but Conte, especially Conte in his second season, is gonna be better, is just a better outlook, a better prospect, a better, more value, I think, more likely to succeed than Simone Inzaghi in his first season. Lukaku, I think, is just a better player and a better bet than Dzeko, simply because of Dzeko's age. And I know it's a different thing, and Dzeko takes care of himself, and you know, he's like the playmaking center forward. Yeah, but you know, he's also 35 years old. And people at that age start getting injured. And he started, 20 games last season in Serie A. Hakimi and Dumfries, I don't even want to go there. I hope Dumfries as well, but for me, Hakimi is one of the best players in the world in his position. And I don't like Çalhanoğlu. Nothing personal, he had a fantastic debut, but I thought he tailed off really badly in the last 6 months at Milan. And you know, when I compare what he brings with what Eriksen, with all his limitations and everything, could have brought, and obviously Eriksen's nobody's fault, and who knows, maybe he will come back, although I'd be really surprised if he does. You know, to me, those are four downgrades. And you know, certainly when it comes to Hakimi and Lukaku, I don't know what you guys think about it, I think we're talking about two of maybe the three best players at Inter, who've been replaced, the third one, in my opinion, being Barella, who've been replaced by guys who aren't on the same level. And Dzeko will never be on the same level, because Dzeko's not going to get better, he's going to get worse. So when I look at that, I think the prospects have to be worse for Inter this season than they were going into last season.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's unmistakable. I think, I don't think anyone can deny that Inter are on paper weaker side, regardless of how we, you know, how we say it. But I do think there's an aspect, and I wanted to ask you about this as well, and that is that I think Romelu Lukaku is not the kind of striker that I think suits Simone that well. He likes the Ciro Immobiles. He likes to have, you know, the only time he ever played Caicedo was towards the, you know, when he was throwing the kitchen sink when he was chasing the game, and Murici he was given, to put it diplomatically. I think that losing Lukaku is not the be all, like, it's not such a disaster for how Simone Inzaghi likes to play, but I agree with you on the on the Christian Eriksen Çalhanoğlu, which was not anyone's fault, because now he's missing a number 10 and he wants to bring in Correa. So I mean, it's going to be different. And as for Simone Inzaghi versus Conte, there's no discussion who's won more and who he's also been a coach longer at this level. Simone is pretty much at the infancy of his coaching career. I've been his biggest fan, you know that. I think he's the next Italian super coach after Conte. I've thought this for 4 years. I still think that he's also proven that in incredibly difficult circumstances, he can handle himself better. So therefore, I think that Inter actually have a better chance, even though they have had a horrible summer. And I agree with everything you said in terms of the weaknesses.
Yeah, look, if you want to find a silver lining, and I was talking to an Italian assistant coach about this. I was actually working at a different club right now in Serie A. And he said, you know what? Conte wears people down. People get tired of his message and the shouting and whatever. So it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing in normal circumstances, different circumstances, to, you know, just sort of transition from that to somebody who's a little more human. like Simone Inzaghi. So I get that side of things. I'm not 100% with you about, you know, Inzaghi likes the Immobile striker, whatever. We know he did well with the Immobile type striker. And also, I can't believe you mentioned Morici and Caicedo on the same breath as Lukaku.
No, I mean that he uses those type of strikers when he wants to throw the kitchen sink.
No, I get it. But if you want to go there, like, he never had a Jekyll type striker either, right?
No.
And now he's going to need to work with one, right? Again, for me, like if you can get Correa on the cheap, sure, fine. It's another body. I think the Thuram thing I thought was odd, not because Thuram is a bad signing, and I like the fact that, oh, look, Inter signing somebody younger, whatever else. It's just that, you know, you're signing him on Raiola terms, so you have no idea where that's going or where that's going to take you. Plus, the other thing about him is he played a lot as a winger in a three. So, yeah, I'm sure he can be in the front too, but I don't know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned this way. I think for most clubs, it helps if you have a clear hierarchy.
Yeah.
So if we go into the season saying, all right, Dzeko and Lautaro are two, you know, first choice strikers. Alexis, since we can't sell him, comes off the bench. And then we have, you know, Pinamonti if we need to go and butt heads or whatever, right? I'm good with that. I'm comfortable with that. If you also need Correa to play a little behind, give you something different, or you know, we saw Stefano Sensi making those runs, fine. Let's give it a go. But I would hate to see Inter then now all of a sudden, you know, take the Lukaku money and kind of invest in air quotes in getting other people's, you know, what look like other people's cheap cast offs. And then you get stuck into these big contracts that Inter can never get rid of, which Inter certainly have a history of.
Oh, yes. I'm going to hand you over to Mike.
As I watch Alessandro Florenzi warm up for Milan, which is kind of a odd sight right now, my question kind of deals with the same type of thing we're just talking about. If things stay status quo for Inter and they don't make any other moves on the transfer market, do you see, like, we didn't get to see it in the first game because Lautaro was suspended. So, but going forward, do you see Lautaro and Dzeko, you know, starting for Inter together, or do you see them more as an interchangeable type striker? Like, what do you see Inzaghi doing up top if things stay status quo?
I would expect them to start together. I hope they start together, and it makes sense, right? You've got Dzeko on the set pieces. Dzeko can drop off. He can certainly pass. Lautaro. Lukaku, there you go. Lautaro, if only. Lautaro runs behind. I think you can do a lot, you know, with the two of them. We've seen Lautaro used in different roles and play with different types of strikers. And I think he has that versatility in him. And, you know, once he signed his contract, he's gonna be hopefully, you know, more calm and more focused, and he can show his value. I don't have an issue with a Dzeko Lautaro front two. And I think if it means that, because I don't expect Dzeko to play every game, if it means that then in certain games, you know, we throw a different look and maybe it's more counterattacking, maybe with Sensi in behind, or maybe, you know, it's Alexis and it's more the counter, that's fine too. But I don't want to see, you know, I look at it, if we're committing big resources in terms of wages to Lautaro and Dzeko, then, and both, you know, one of them's new, the other one signs a new contract, then those are the people who should play. Those are the people we should be getting on the pitch.
Fair enough. I'm going to hand you over to Jake.
Yeah, I've got a bit of an interesting question for you. When Conte was appointed into manager, you're very much against it. You turned out to be a bit of a mystic Meg on that one, and proven very correct. So I just wanted to ask you a bit about Simone Inzaghi. Do you think he's a manager who can actually win the Scudetto for Inter? I know he's being discussed a little bit, but has he got it in him to replicate what Conte has done, albeit in more difficult circumstances?
So I don't think Inter are by any means favourites for the title. I think I had them finishing fourth in my preseason predictions. But again, that comes with the big caveat that this is Italy and it's stupid to make predictions now when the mercato's open until August 31st and so many things can change. Simone Inzaghi's, I think, is a really difficult one. I know Juve took a really long, hard look at him. And part of the reason, from what I was told, that they didn't go for him, this is when Allegri left and they appointed Sarri, is that, you know, they thought he was a bit soft. He was a bit wimpy, a bit of a mama's boy. And I think that simply has to do with the way he looks, frankly, right? And I think, you know, the same way people thought Ancelotti was soft, you know, to say, in fact, the person I spoke to said the exact same thing, right? This is the same stuff that they said about Ancelotti when he came to Juve, you know? He's got the bonaccione kind of look, as we say in Italy, and so on. And I think in some ways, most successful managers in Italy, probably in Europe, I work with me now because I'm just came to my mind. Either they're like hard asses, you know, and obviously, you know, the type, the Conte, Mourinho, whatever, or they're cerebral, right? I'd put Tuchel in there, I'd put Guardiola in there. Allegri comes in kind of hard between, but Allegri can be really snarky and cutting as well, right? So, like, he's not a traditional hard ass, perhaps, but, you know, he's got that edge about him. Simone Inzaghi doesn't really fit either category. He's just a guy that goes out, coaches his team, gets them to play together. One thing at Lazio that I was told when, you know, when he was there was he, even though he had a lot of player because it's Lotito and it's the market and it's Pusolense, this and that, he really only trusted the same sort of 13, 14 guys. And that was a criticism of him. Other players don't necessarily feel as involved. I think that's something he's going to have to change a little bit at Inter. But I think if he can command the respect, then, you know, I think his achievements at Lazio suggest that he deserves respect. Then I think Inter can be competitive. I don't know that it's going to happen in the first season, though, because, you know, his football is very different from Conte's and his style is very different from Conte's.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more direct and much more vertical than, horizontal in that sense than Conte's vertical and very rigidly controlled and methodical football, for sure. I can just echo that after 2 years of Luciano Spalletti and Antonio Conte, I feel very good and very happy that an actual sane human being that speaks in complete sentences, that isn't a mouth breather, is now in charge of Inter. That whose sentences have a start, a middle, and an end, and a point to them. I'm very happy about that. It's a nice break from the 4 years of crazy that we've had. Before, that was a nice segue. I want to ask you about your top four, or actually your top six, because the European places. Who do you have from 1 to 6?
Okay, I
know. I'm with you.
Windows open.
I'm with you.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I mean, I think I picked Juve to win, maybe for the simple reason that, you know, for all 9 years that they won it, I picked them to win every, sorry, I picked against them every year and they always won. So I picked them last year and they didn't, so I decided to pick them again. But no, but I mean, like, objectively, this is a really, really good team. And I think Allegri has what it takes. I think for me, the really interesting one is Milan. As I recall, I had Milan finishing second. And I think, you know, it was more to do with the fact that I think a lot of their kids are going to come good, and I think they're going to continue to grow. I think they have some really, really smart people making personnel decisions. Some of them I don't like, I would have given Ibrahimovic, you know, a freaking pay for play. I mean, like, you love the club so much, fine, you know, we'll pay you $100,000 every time you step on the pitch and that's it, or something like that. You know, honestly, like, but I'm really happy, and I'm even a little bit proud of the fact that, you know, I know this is a total aside, that they stood up to Donnarumma and to Calhanoglu, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It's about time people do that. You know, people are crying, we don't have any money, the Super League. Well, yeah, don't give these people and these agents enormous salaries. You know, remember who's in charge, and you're not going to have this problem. So, I think I had them finishing second, and I believe I had, I'm blanking now. I really like Atalanta. I kind of feel that Romero is somebody that they can absorb, and I really like the kid from Verona that they brought in.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if he's going to play right away, but, you know, they like to ease guys in. I think Piccoli, I'm not saying this because he scored at the weekend, but I thought Piccoli was a huge part of Spezia's season last year. He's only 20 years old. He gives him another body, even if Duvan Zapata goes. So I really like Atalanta. I think they can finish top four. I think I had Inter fourth. Although having watched, you know, after this weekend, I remind myself, man, Spalletti has a lot of really good players.
Yeah.
Like I said last year, that it's probably the best squad in Serie A in terms of talent.
On paper,
On paper. And yeah, the question is, at what point does Spalletti start to self-destruct, right? And also, I think the Insigne thing weighs heavily as well. I don't love Insigne as much as some people do, but obviously he's important there. And then finally, your old pal Mourinho. Man, Zaniolo's there. I was super skeptical about making the transition from Fonseca to kind of like the anti-Fonseca in Mourinho. But, you know, Zaniolo is pretty huge coming back, you know, like that. And I really like the Tammy Abraham signing as well. So
I love Shomurodov. I think he's like, if you were to like breed a Mourinho striker perfect for Mourinho, it'd be Shomurodov. Like I think he's ideal for his football.
Yeah, he's a really, really good fit as well. So, you know, you put those things together and, you know, they're going to be competitive too. I think Inter should be a notch above those other teams. And I think Inter should be competing, you know, in the top three. But I don't know. I feel like all these people have the levels to go to. I mean,
yeah.
I love Osimhen, right? Who's to say this isn't Osimhen's breakout season? He doesn't score 30 goals. You know, he's got people setting him up. As long as he doesn't get himself sent off. And it wasn't even his fault at the weekend, by the way. You know.
Come on, Gab. He punched someone. He slapped someone in the face.
Come on, man.
Come on, Gab. You can't slap people in the face. I mean, it was like, of all the red cards that we had that weekend, I thought that was the clearest. Don't you agree? I mean...
I don't know. I got the 20 minutes. The guy's pulling him.
Oh, God. But, I mean, just quickly, who do you think will win Supercoppa? Do you think Simo, and also Coppa Italia, and who's your capocannoniere?
I think I'd choose Immobile as capocannoniere. And that was because I obviously want to pick the Portuguese man from Turin, because he might not be there. And I sort of looked around and I said, how many games is Ibra going to play? Okay, not many. Lukaku's gone. So he seemed like the obvious choice, right? He's scoring so many goals. Hey, there's not much science in that one.
No.
Copa Italia, Super Copa, man, I don't know. I can't provide predictive value on those because knockout competitions over the course of the season, so many other factors. I do hope Juve do not win the Coppa Italia so that, you know, we don't come up. In fact, that's the thing that bugs me, is like, it's a very Italian thing when, like, you know, they come out and they say things like, but Juve still won the Super Coppa and the Coppa Italia, due trofei. I'm like, stop it with the Super Coppa. Come on, man. Let's grow up. That's not a trophy. It's one game. It's something silly. You know, seriously, no, it's like when Milan had the Trofeo Berlusconi, they started counting it. You know, yeah, that, the Gamper, the Bernabeu, yeah, count all of them. Coppa del Nonno, come on, man.
Coppa del Nonno. Love it.
My friends like to call them the Mickey Mouse trophies of the league.
Yeah.
it's worse than Mickey Mouse. It's like one of those, and I say this as a Disney employee, it's not Mickey Mouse. It's those, like, knockoffs, like, you know, Dickie Douse or something that, you know, you might find on a street corner that, you know, they made somewhere in a sweatshop by children for children. It's like that. Like, honestly, come on, man.
Absolutely love it.
I don't want to say nobody cares. Coppa Italia, you get to the quarterfinals, head-to-head.
Yeah.
I really enjoy watching it. I enjoy watching Coppa Italia more now than before. Because it's fun, big teams facing each other, and you know they know 90 minutes here or it's head to head and it's all over, right?
Yeah.
But the Super Coppa, seriously, you know,
I think
I can do without.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be what they've intended it to be. It should kick off this. It's a start the season with a game. It's not the most important trophy. It's just a game, like you said. But the way that they've done it now, and they've got it like mid-season, and they put it in Saudi Arabia, I understand the financial reasons they do that. But I think it kind of ruins the point a little bit. I mean, I like the fact that Coppa Italia is the season ends. I'd like the Supercoppa to start the kick off the season. I think that's like, you know.
Well, if I can make a point about Saudi Arabia as well and holding it there, I'd love somebody in the media with access to the people who decide to put it there to say, okay, are you having in Saudi Arabia just because they cut you a big check? Or is this part of a concerted campaign in the Gulf to create sponsorships and partnerships and whatever else and things that'll bring revenue to the league and grow the game in that part of the world? And if so, what are the KPIs and how far along are you to reaching your targets? I'd love somebody to say that, because from where I sit, it just seems like, oh, you know, some rich guy in Saudi Arabia just cut you a big check and that's it. And let's go and have a jolly there, you know, as much as you can have one in Saudi. But you see what I'm saying? If it's part of a concerted campaign, and I think the Lega Serie A has done a lot of things better than they did in the past. But, and I know this is obviously a situation they inherited, and goodness knows it's better than, remember the year they had it in China?
Yeah.
And it looked like the camera work was like, you know, some guy in like a handy cam from the 1980s or something filming it. I don't want to see that again, but still.
No, I hear you. I agree with you on that. But then again, I think it's the Lega Calcio and them having a strategy is yeah, I don't have that much. Maybe I'm too cynical there. I don't have any faith in them having that. I think the TV deal and how that's been mishandled this year and going into this season, not just in Italy, but outside of Italy, the way that it is in Canada, it's in the Middle East. They don't even have, they're showing five games a week in Middle East, North Africa region because of what they did with Be In and Be Out and that whole mess.
I don't know if this is true, but I've had people on my feed, you know, from Australia saying like, well, they haven't assigned the rights, you know.
France doesn't have one either.
I believe a few years ago, Serie A actually did something innovative. And in those territories, I don't want to bore people with this, but I know you get listeners from all over the world. In those territories where the rights weren't assigned, you could essentially, on a geolocation basis, you could essentially buy the package directly from Serie A.
Yeah.
And you would get the world feed, right?
I
forget what it was called. Like, and that's the way they should do it. If you can't sell the rights, just freaking do it that way. Get some money. And it's not like the marginal cost of doing it is tiny, right? So, yeah. but at least you can reach people. And all right, so they get the World Feed comment. Some of those World Feed commentaries are terrible. Some of them are okay, but at least you got something, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand why they don't do that.
No, but for me, I'm a big fan of the CVC Bain Capital deal. I think that's the way for Serie A to move forward in order to have any shot of competing with the Premier League. Creating a media company, selling off 10%, which gives you cash, and then they take care of monetizing and pushing this globally. I think that's the way to go. I think it's the only way that the Serie A and La Liga will be able to compete with the Premier League in terms of TV revenue. I don't know what you think about
that.
You
know, it's funny because, so the whole issue with that is, I mean, from the beginning, I had the opportunity to speak to one ownership group that I know pretty well. They were big proponents. And then I spoke to another ownership group. Well, I can tell you where it is because I interviewed him. Rocco Commisso at Fiorentina, who was dead set against it. And I think one of the...
What was his reasons for being against it?
Well, this is the thing. There were two key things to make it happen, right? One was no more Lotito, right? Lotito, the de facto commissioner of Serie A, no more, right?
Mm.
Grown-ups in the room making the decisions. And unfortunately, even then, you saw with the fact that, hey, look, Salernitana are in Serie A, that unfortunately getting rid of Lotito it's like getting rid of that horrible rash that never goes away, right? I mean, I don't know what they have to do, but we joke about this, but he is part of the reason.
Yeah.
People don't want to invest in Serie A, or people increasingly are, but he scares people away, right? But at least he's been slightly neutered, right? Right now, he's not the power broker he once was, Salernitana notwithstanding. But the other big reason was, okay, so these guys come in. They pay a large amount of money and they have 10% control. Yeah. When you have minority control like that, you get this thing called negative control.
Mm.
Essentially, you get the power. You have certain powers that go far beyond your shareholding and where you can veto certain things. You can control certain aspects. And that was really what the argument was all about. It's a pretty sophisticated structure to put in place. It takes a good amount of faith. And, you know, to hear Rocco talk about it, they were essentially giving the Serie A product away. Because in his opinion, in a couple years, there'd be better governance of Serie A and they can make a lot more money without having the funds in their business, right? That was his view.
Yeah.
The other people I spoke to said, that's ridiculous. The only way we can run this properly is if, you know, we have, I don't want to say grown-ups, but we have this external party that we're accountable to that is going to force us to be transparent, is going to force us to have better governance. But the only way they're going to do that is if we give them that, what's called negative control. If we give them that ability to almost like a golden share so that we as a league don't make decisions that are non-transparent, that are going to scare investors away, decisions for political reasons and so on. And I think that was essentially the crux of the issue in Serie A, which made it a bit different than, for example, what happened in La Liga, where fundamentally it is, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid not liking Javier Tebas and not trusting Javier Tebas and wanting to hold on to their pie. In Italy, there was a much more collaborative ethos, and that's why you see there were big clubs in favor and big clubs against it.
Mm. No, I agree. But I mean, I think that point that Rocco made, I mean, that's a negotiating point. The negative control thing, that you can limit that with clauses as to what areas they can get involved in and whatnot. And I think the only way for this league to grow is for an external company specialized in monetizing and pushing this globally is the only way forward, because as long as you're going to have this situation where you have where Preziosi and all these guys are going to
sit. Ferreira was on my screen a second ago as you were talking.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there you go. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, there you go. I mean, as long as these people have to, you know, rubber stamp everything, this league ain't going anywhere. It's just as simple as that.
I'm still marginally optimistic going forward. I always play the game where, you know, I count, okay, so how many of the Serie A presidents or owners have criminal records? And, no, honestly, like,
I know.
If you go back like 15 years ago, it was more than half. Yeah. You know, and some of them were disputed, like Berlusconi and yeah. and the guy in Cagliari and whatever. But you know, right now, you ask yourself, you know, how many? Or put this test, like, you know, who? How many of these guys would I take advice from to do something legal? You know, and you know the fact that. Okay, I still have my top three freak shows, but then, you know, I look at it and like, I don't particularly like Urbano Cairo, but you know, he's all right. He's a businessman. He kind of does his things. Most of these American owners seem to be in it for a buck and they run their businesses like a business. Rocco admittedly is slightly different, but you know, you can deal with it. I think Inter at some point will end up in good hands because the club is too strong, the history is too strong, the brand is too strong, and I think they have done some good things in the last couple of years. So, you know, little by little, you get a little more positive. And, you know, and unfortunately, then you realize Lotito owns two clubs, so then, you know, he's in the top three twice, you know, with Ferrero and Preziosi, unfortunately. But
yeah, those guys.
So...
yeah. Thank you so much, Kevin. Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for coming up. Before we let you go, people, it's at Marcotti on Twitter. And also, if you got something coming on that you know coming up, because you know I love your Monday musings. And also, if you got something else coming on, the floor is yours. Feel free to promote it.
Yeah. Well, if you need a quick rundown, quick opinionated rundown of what's going on in Europe twice a week, the Gab and Jewel show is a good. Protocol, if I say so myself, it's a podcast. You can get it where you get your podcasts. We also have little videos that go up on the ESPN YouTube channel. We hope to be doing something a little different this year as well, adding sort of some podcast specials where, you know, we have conversations with people in the game, hopefully really famous people and maybe also some people who are not famous but are important. So look out for that and the column's up a couple times a week and you can always generally always hit me up on Twitter, and if I have time, always happy to answer.
Thank you so much, Kev. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's my pleasure, boys. Thanks for having me on and keep the faith.
Definitely. Ci sentiamo. Ciao.
Alla grande.
Ciao. Right. Let's move on to the game against Genoa, which was absolutely a fantastic game from Inter's point of view in every sense of the word, because it was maybe for a lot of people, it was a surprise to see Inter play like that. But I'm not surprised because this is how Simone Inzaghi's Lazio looked like when they were at their peak. They dominated possession. They pressed high up. They were sometimes a little bit attacking and sometimes lost balance and therefore were a little bit exposed, as we saw against Genoa at times. But this is how it looks. It's much more direct, it's much more horizontal, and it's much more position and much more attacking, if you want to call it that way. I want to hear what you think, Mike, your reactions to you know, what were you surprised by what you saw, and how, you know, what do you think this means going forward?
Well, my first thought was, when did Bastoni become a trequartista? He was playing like a forward at some points, and not even just because it was a corner, but like he was, and it comes back to what you just said, you know, playing such a high press. He was even playing defense at some points. It was like he was in the midfield, he was playing attacking, and that was, I think that's something that we just maybe wouldn't see under Conte, and that's what I really liked yesterday. I know it had a lot to do with Genoa not being that great of a team, but I love that. I love that how, you know, different positions were playing, different players were playing different positions on and keep the opponents guessing. That's what I really liked. I mean, I look at every individual player in the game, and it was like every single player, I think, with the exception of maybe Sensi, I really liked. I think we got exactly what we expected out of Dzeko. He was great. The way he controls the ball is what the he's the player that we start Roma. You know, he's going to get his chances. He's going to miss a lot, but he's also going to take care of them. I really, man, that assist from Barella was probably just out of this world to have the genes just to decide to do that. Mm. But I really like just the formation and how everyone played together as a team. And I just I love to see Lautaro in this lineup. Again, a lot of people are saying that, oh, it's Genoa. Relax, it's Genoa. But I liked it, and Hakan, like I didn't expect that at all, especially with all the garbage that Milan fans were saying in the last couple of months, and then he didn't have a really good Euros, but I thought he was excellent. He was in on what, three of the goals, and I like the start. Hey, it's just Genoa, but let's move on to the next week, and hopefully we can get another 3 points, right?
Yeah, for me, this echoed a lot of what we saw the first game under Antonio Conte, 4-0 against Lecce, but with the difference that Inter was an Inter who was, brimming with confidence and aiming higher and world domination, whilst this is an Inter coming from a summer that has been weakened, at least on paper and in every change they've made. But that's why I was so impressed by this win, because the mentality, they came out as champions, they behaved like champions. And above all, when you see Arturo Vidal play the way he did, that tells me that this is a team that is behind Simone Inzaghi. They want to win, they're concentrated. And he said as much, that it's made his life easier, it's made his job easier. I'm keen to hear, I mean, you know, Mo, you have Inter winning the Serie A. What's your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, look, nothing changed my mind positively or negatively. I think they played the same way they did in the preseason. I think the various attacking sentences played between the different between the link up between the midfield and the attackers in the final third was very impressive. The fluidity in moving the ball was very nice. But again, I think we're going to win the league not because we've improved, which we might do. I mean, Gav again said that maybe it's Osimhen's breakout season, but it could be Dumfries' breakout season. It could be whoever's breakout season. So we don't know. But I think that we're going to win the league because we're still no other side has, seems like it's been able to bridge the gap between Inter and between them and the champions more than anything. So I think what we saw from the remaining performances, whether it's Atalanta who did manage to win, or Lazio who also did manage to win, or Juventus of course who drew, and Milan against Sampdoria are playing right now. I think this for me is what really cemented my prediction in that we're going to win the league at the end of the season. What got me a bit worried was at the beginning of the second half, the way that Genoa were able to reach Inter's final third quite easily. Not that they had chances, but I think, we spoke about Conte's categoria and the fact that, again, Gab was saying that Inzaghi is a bit of a whiny mama's boy in Juventus' eyes, and that's why they didn't take him. So I think maybe this is the one point in our play where we might suffer, is that it doesn't seem like the players have the same sort of killer instinct to eliminate attacks by the opponents at the bud. So while, of course, there were no real substantial threats on the Inter goal, I felt like they allowed Genoa some, towards the beginning of the second half, some control in the middle third and in towards Inter's final third, defensive third, that would not have been normally afforded by Conte. You would have probably seen Conte on the sidelines screaming and shouting going crazy, where Inzaghi seemed a bit more resigned. And I don't know if this is an intentional sort of tactical decision by Inzaghi. He knows that he can't pressure the players. This is the way that he controls the game. It's part of his overall plan. Or whether this is a character flaw and we might find ourselves suffering against bigger teams who do have that bite or more of a bite than Genoa do. So this was my only point of concern was that sense of midfield cynical control. You know, like they seem to be lacking this sort of cynical control in the central midfield. Or if only for a portion of the match, because they had dominated the rest of the game almost from start to finish. But that's my only asterisk on the performance.
I agree with that. I think we saw that also in the chances conceded defensively. And I think that's something that he addressed by bringing on Vecino and Vidal, so which encouraged me. Jake, just before we quickly move on to the Hellas game to quickly predict, because Hellas are awful and they're coached by probably the worst coach to have coached in the Serie A in the last decade. Just quickly give me your thoughts on what you take away from the Genoa game.
I want to echo what you said, really. I think the most encouraging part is simply the fact that Inter responded so well, albeit on match day one against fairly weak opposition to what's been a really tough summer. I think the players really show that they're behind Inzaghi. I think as well, what's easy to forget, you talk about Lukaku and Hakimi leaving. Yeah, they're two big, massive players for Inter, but you've still got some really excellent players in there. Players like Milan Skriniar, you've got Barella. I know it goes without saying, but another thing as well that's been mentioned there by Mo, you know, you're talking about squad players that might even come in a little bit more this year than what didn't last year. Players like Arturo Vidal. I think one thing you could perhaps criticise Conte for, and you can understand why he did it, is he didn't use the squad a whole lot towards the back end of the season. I'd find during game, you'd have Lukaku playing 90 minutes flat out in a game into a 2-0 up in, and you'd almost be like, just take him off. You know, but I think Inzaghi would be more inclined to rotate the squad a little bit. And I think it's a different scenario. You know, Inter were chasing that Scudetto. It was the first one in a decade and things like that. So, you know, Conte obviously had that on his mind. But I think as well, to echo a bit what Gab said too, I think having a manager as well as a little less crazy will help too. It'll help take a little bit of pressure off the players. I'm looking forward to seeing Inzaghi's Inter. I was really encouraged by the manner of the performance. It was a bit more exciting. I think you mentioned it before, Nima. I think sometimes under Conte, it's a little bit rigid. You know, it's a little bit sort of, you know, let's just make sure we win this. Whereas Inzaghi has a bit more fluidity to his football. So I was really excited. I was impressed with Edin Dzeko too. I thought he played really, really well. I was a bit underwhelmed by the sign. I thought, well, you know, he might be okay as backup, but he impressed me. I think he's in really good shape. You know, the way he controlled that ball when Brozovic blasted it like a cannon at his legs, I mean, that was pretty impressive. So, you know, that's something that we can perhaps rely on through the season. Mm-hmm. You know, there's experience there too. So, yeah, I'm quite hopeful having watched it. And, you know, maybe not quite as positive as Mo, but I am thinking, listening to him, you know.
But then again, you are English as well, and that's what you have to. That's what we have to have the balance, don't we? We need someone to Mo's positivity. We need someone to keep us grounded.
Yeah, well, that's all I know. That's all I can go off. I can't go off too much positivity. I've never seen it, so I don't want to get too carried away.
No, but I think for me, Dzeko, man of the match. Vidal, like you said, his attitude. I mean, coming off the bench, I haven't seen him like this in years. I was really impressed.
He's considered to be a bit done as well. You know, yeah. Points last year, he looked, you know, to borrow the phrase, he looked a bit dusted, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, so that was encouraging.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Let's quickly, before we move to Moji, Moratti and Frog of the Week, just results and goal scorers. I'm going to go first against Hellas, 3-0. I think Lautaro gets one. I think Satriano gets one. I think Dzeko gets one. Mike, what's your predictions and who do you think is going to score? What's your prediction? Who do you think is going to score and what's your prediction?
Yeah, let's go with 2-1. But I actually watched the Sassuolo-Hellas game, and actually I thought Hellas played pretty good for being down a man the entire game. So I know Di Francesco, not the best manager in the world, but they did give Sass a good run on the weekend. So I don't think it'll be that much of a pushover, but it'll be obviously really nice to see Lautaro back in the lineup. So we'll give it 2 goals for Lautaro. And we'll say 2-1.
Okay. Mo?
I'm following Michael's lead in that I think it's a Lautaro brace, but I think it's a clean sheet as well. So 2-0, Lautaro, urinates the Marcus territory. he's the head honcho now.
Yeah, he is. He really is. Well said. Jake, what about you?
I hate picking score lines, but I'm keen to point out last few times I've been on the pod, I've actually got a couple of correct scores.
Yeah, you have. So, you have.
You know, let's give it a go. I'm going to say 3-1. I think Hellas will score. I don't think they were too bad at the weekend, especially when they were down to 10 men for part of that game. I thought they were quite good. But I do agree with what you say about Di Francesco. I'm not convinced at all. And I think Inter will be up for it. I think Jekyll will score. I like the idea of Satriano scoring too. I really want him to be good. So, yeah, I'm going to back him. I'm going to say Çalhanoğlu gets the other one.
Well, let's move on to the part of the show where we pay tribute, rip the piss out of, and criticize someone or something heavily in the world of football, starting with the comical side of it, this week's frog, which we presented by Mr. Michael Gallo.
È clamoroso! Autogol di Ranocchia!
Oh man, it's gotta be Juve, right? Like, come on. Like, what a mess. Like, they go up 2-0 against Udine, and the game is in control, it's over. And they lose Buffon. Yeah, they lose Buffon. You think, okay, now we're moving on for Buffon. What the first game back, Chesney literally gave Udine 2 points because of that idiotic first goal. He came out and made a fumble, and then he comes out and makes another error by taking the guy down. And then on the on the second goal, what was he thinking? I don't even understand what was going on in his head. But the thing is, though, that's not even my frog of the week. My frog is Ronaldo, because we live in a world that has VAR, and you're celebrating goals like it's the World Cup final in the first game of the season. You take your shirt off, you get a yellow card, and guess what? Your goal got taken back, and you still got a tie. That's ridiculous.
It is froggy. It is froggy. It's a very froggish thing. I thought of that too. Is that him celebrating like he just won it, and the longer VAR took, I was like, they're gonna disallow this, aren't they?
The longer it goes, the more chances it's turning around. And guess what? He knew it too. As soon as he got his shirt back at the end, he starts smiling. He knew. And guess what? That's you got to know better, especially in a VAR world. You cannot be acting like that and taking your shirt off until you've got the check done. And guess what? Yeah, you paid your price. That's karma for you. And that's why he's the frog of the week.
Absolutely. Let's move on to something much more positive. This week's Moratti, which we presented by Mr. Positivity himself, Mr. Mohamed Nasser.
He works a lot. He's intelligent. And he surprises people sometimes with his ideas. Not easy to find one person of this qualities.
Once again, I'm blessed with a wide array of things to choose from in a world of positivity, at least in my brain, anyway. Where it's all roses and rainbow tree. I don't understand where you guys are getting this negativity. Marcotti saying we've downgraded everywhere, we're this and that, and Suning are bankrupt. You guys live in an alternate universe. This is the land of...
The truth is somewhere in the middle. The truth is somewhere in the middle, I'm going to say.
No, but all jokes aside, you guys have mentioned a lot of really interesting things. You know, Dzeko's performance, Vidal's attitude, Çalhanoğlu scoring and getting involved so well on his debut. But for me, there was nothing more positive than seeing the fans back at the Meazza.
Yeah.
At the
San Siro. Amen.
There was absolutely nothing better than this. Playing in San Siro with no crowds for a year and a half has been abysmal. And the fact that they didn't get to send off the champions or see them off at the stadium in the stands, despite being packed in the tens of thousands outside, which of course is the most ridiculous thing in the world, you know, it broke my heart. But now, at least the Inter debut at the San Siro as champions in front of a home crowd, albeit 50% capacity. Even that's 50% capacity. But it's, better than nothing. And really, football is nothing without the fans. It's a shell of itself without the fans. So the San Siro with a proper crowd in it, with proper ooing and aahing and screaming and chanting is the Moratti.
Amen. And let's move on to something much more negative, this week's Moji, which will be presented by Mr. Jake Smalley.
Viva!
Now, this one is sort of born out of personal frustration. It relates to a certain tattooed-necked Belgian midfielder who's going to play in the Belgian Brewery League now with Antwerp. So it's Rajin Yangulan for me this week, who's been in trouble for drink driving. And I just want to take this time to read a statement out to you from his personal spokesman, which I think will make you laugh. So he was caught drink driving just a week after joining the club. So he's had his licence suspended. And this is what his own personal spokesman had to say. Umar Saldi, he added, once Raja had been caught, Raja had a free Saturday night, and he admits that he let himself get carried away by the emotion of the moment. You know, so obviously you go out and drink drive. He's had a huge boost from the warm welcome he's received from lots of his old friends. Again, you know, I'm so happy I've had such a good reception. I'm going to go and drink drive 150 miles an hour. He hadn't intended to drive after drinking, but it happened due to specific circumstances. Okay, so that, you know, that makes everything okay. So every time I commit any sort of crime or do anything wrong, I'll just say it's down to specific circumstances. I'm really disappointed in Raja, because when I first started writing for the site, it was around the time where I'd been to watch the derby just after he'd signed. I was really excited. I'm into shirt. I even got Yangulan on the back of my shirt, and I was so wanting to be good, and he's just let me down, and he's hit a new low for me. So he's Modgy of the week.
I mean, anyone who's he's speeding. It's a 4 a.m. on Sunday morning. He's speeding. That's why he gets pulled over. They do a breathalyzer test, and he's over the limit. They suspend his license. It's, to me, there is no, I have nothing but contempt and rancid hatred for people who drink and drive. No respect whatsoever. You're an idiot if you do that. Doesn't matter if it's Brozovic, Nainggolan, random Joe on the street. Doesn't matter. You just don't do that. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. I'd like to thank Gab Marcotti. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Gallo. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. And very nice to hear everyone again. Thank you.
And Mr. Mohamed Nasa.
Woot woot. Always a pleasure. See you guys soon.
Mr. Jake Smalley.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to have a chat again about Inter again. And let's hope for three more points again this weekend against Hellas. 4-0 Inter.
For sure. And until next time, I'm your host, Nima Tavale Rutsari, wishing you health. Stay safe, stay healthy, listen to your authorities. 3 points, and sempre e solo Forza Inter.